Jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is no joke. It takes years to master.
Martial arts are a vehicle for developing your human potential. And nothing in my life has ever put me in face with reality better than jiu-jitsu.
Training in BJJ offers a powerful lens through which to examine some primary human concerns: truth versus delusion, self-knowledge, ethics, and overcoming fear.
There's more philosophy in our mats than actually philosophy in any Ivy League school.
Welcome to Philosophy.
What up, everybody?
And welcome to another episode of
Philosophy.
My name is Ollie.
My name is Iki.
And how you doing, bro?
I'm chilling like a villain. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, man. We ain't going to mess about today. We're going to get straight into it.
Yeah, man. We have like a special guest, like a podcast that we've been waiting so
long. We've been trying for so long to set this up.
It finally happened.
Ladies and gentlemen,
put your hands together
for none other than
Victor Doria.
How's it going, bro?
Oh, good, man. Oh, good. Perfect.
Nice, okay, man. So listen, I'm going to ask you the question we ask everyone that comes onto the podcast. How did you get into jiu-jitsu?
I used to play water polo, and I used to play really well. You know, I was a good player. I started at 11, and until I was when I got to 16, I made it to the national team in Brazil, and I was training super hard, like 4 or 5 hours a day, swimming like crazy and getting stronger and all that. Super young still. By 17, 1993, precisely in April 1993, I got into a brawl with the captain of the team. And he was way bigger than me because I was 17 by then. And I was playing with the adults, which were like 25, 30, whatever. And much bigger guys, much stronger guys. And it wasn't actually a brawl. It was like the guy tried to drown me. And when I say drown, it's not like when you're playing with your kid or with your friends in the pool. It's water polo drown. So they grab you by the shorts here, and they stretch their arm to a point where you're like maybe 5 inches away from the surface. You can see it, but your nose can't reach it, and you are going to die. That's the closest to the dying experience that I had. Like, I almost died there. And when he released me, all I could do was like throw a punch, and I didn't even know where it would be. But it was just so much desperation that it ended up landing in the guy's face, and he broke like his nose, teeth. It was terrible. It was terrible. So the guy was knocked out in the water, a lot of blood, horrible. I didn't even know what I was doing. So long story short, I got expelled from the team and kind of banned from the sport. And then I didn't have a career anymore. And so my cousin took me to, he said, man, you have to start training jiu-jitsu. I've been training jiu-jitsu for 2 years and I'm loving it. You have a lot of energy, all of that aggressiveness and this and that. So he took me to Carson Gracie headquarters in Copacabana. So I went there and I saw all these guys like beasts training against each other and sweating. And the place is like hot and humid and like maybe 60 guys on the mats. And I'm talking like the guys that I grew up learning from. So first day I was there was Amaury Bitetti, Murilo Bustamante, Sergio Souza Bolão, Ricardo de la Riva, Cássio Cardoso, Zé Mário Sperry. All these guys were in the same room training. I didn't know none of them because I didn't know jiu-jitsu by then. So I started right there. And in June 1993, I started my journey in jiu-jitsu as a white belt, all the way to 1999 when I got my black belt under Carlson Gracie in Copacabana, and that pretty much sums it up.
Man, what was it like training amongst those legends? Like, what was the atmosphere? What was the training?
I'll tell you right now. That's the one thing that people don't realize, and I see today. So I am trying to charge here my computer. Okay.
Okay.
I see today that people like There wasn't a day in my life from white to black belt, from 1993 to 1999, every day of my life in that period, that I walked out of Carson Gracie headquarters saying, okay, today I trained really well. I beat everybody. Wow. That wasn't a day like that. Every single day that I trained at that place, I got my ass handled to me at least once. At least one time in one role, someone submitted me or played with me or just humbled me. You know, like I never had a day, like we have days like that when you step in the gym and we're killing everybody. That never happened to me from white to black. It took me years and years to maybe walk out of a gym and say, okay, I beat everybody. But you know what? In the tournaments, though, I could kill everybody because I knew there wouldn't be a harder day, a tougher day than a day at the gym. Because the room that I was training in was the toughest room in the world by then, you know, in the world. So there was, I remember walking in 1998, I was a brown belt. I won worlds. I walked in the gym on a Monday or Tuesday right after the weekend. And people are saying, oh, Victor deserves his black belt because he won everything, won worlds and this and that. And Master Carson came to me and said, do you think you deserve your black belt now? You've been a brown belt for a year and a half. And I commit the mistake of saying, well, Master, maybe. And he goes, okay, maybe. So let's get this sorted out. And he calls Ricardo Liborio and said, Liborio, roll with Victor for 10 minutes, please. Let me see what he's got. And he submitted me 8 times.
Wow.
He submitted me 8 times. He tells me he doesn't deserve, remember that. Say, of course you don't, because you were submitting me. I was on the other side. I would never forget that shit, you know? So I was submitted like 8 times in 10 minutes right after walking out of a tournament being world champion. You know, and brown and black belt are not that far apart, you know, in that moment, that period. But then I saw that I sucked so bad that I said, you know what? I'm just stay here. It took me another year and a half in a brown belt. I only got my black belt December 1999.
No, wow. Man, I work with Liborio. Liborio set up the Black Belt Magazine Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, okay, look at that.
Look at that. It's a bunk you. You got your black belt mug. This guy's on brand. I love it. So look, you started off at Carson Gracie's. You are now with Cyborg, Master Cyborg, yep, at Fight Sports. Talk to me about the journey from when you kind of moved from one to the other, how you guys met, the journey to get there.
So the story that when I met Cyborg is also really cool. By 2006, I was getting back to training hard because I had a spam from 2001 all the way to 2005. I was like, I had a very serious injury in 2001 when I was training for MMA in my neck. So I had 3 herniations at once training with Saul Ribeiro. I got 3 herniations and my body went numb and I had to go to the hospital. I stayed there 3 days without moving any part of my body. And I didn't know if I would ever do it again. So this was a very, very bad experience. I didn't run the risk of dying or anything, but I could never walk. Maybe I would never walk again. And thank God it didn't happen. Like I recovered well from it, but I promised myself I would never train Ogi again or MMA, whatever it was. Because I was in Japan with Minotauro in 2000 when he went in 2001 when he went to fight the Rings championship. That he beat Valentino Verin in the last match. I was there with him and I trained. I did the whole camp with him a month in Japan. And when I came back, I said, man, that's my thing. I'm gonna do MMA. And I had the best guys around me. So I started training like crazy, doing well. And in that day, I hurt my neck. So fast forward 2006, I went back to training hard. And Master Toko Albuquerque from Nova Geração, he called me and said, man, you've been training hard. You should come here. We should put together a team for the team nationals. And I said, I love it. This is the tournament that I like the most because it's brown and black belt together. It's super cool. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. So I went to Nova Geração. But Toko had an amazing team of lightweights, like Pulga, Diego Asenjo, a lot of lighter guys. They're really, really skilled and tough, but they're much lighter than me. They're like 75 kilos, like 180 pounds, not more, not even more than that. So I walked in there and I said, man, I would love to train here, and I think we can put together a team, but we don't have anyone like heavy. I need a couple guys at least to train with in order to prepare for that. And he goes, don't worry. Tomorrow, I have a guy coming from Mato Grosso do Sul that you're going to like. I didn't know who that was. So next day, I was changing the changing room, in the locker room, and then this guy walks in, like big traps, huge ears, ugly as fuck. I said, man, who's this guy? Probably the guy that he mentioned. And then Coco comes to me and introduced me. Hey, Victor, this is a Cyborg. And I look at him and he goes, oh, yeah, I know you. I heard from you. I said, man, I never heard from you. Sorry. Because I didn't know him. You know, I had no idea. And he said he knew me because of everything that I did before. He was super nice. So the first moment that we met, we got in a 10-minute brawl, me and him. Master Toko asked everyone to stop and put us standing together on the mat, in the center of the mat, and 10 minutes went by. We killed each other. It was one of the best roles that I had in a long time. And by the end of it, we just fell apart. We're just like, oh my God, we have to do it again, but I had to recover. So that's how I met Cyborg, 2006. We fought Brazilian Nationals together, Team Nationals together. We ended up losing to Braza by then. Cyborg lost to André Galvão. I had a couple very good fights in that day too. I won all my fights, but the team lost. So Cyborg, the following year, came to the U.S. and I never saw him again. I would see him again in 2015, walking the streets in Miami. I saw him. I said, bro. He goes, what the fuck are you doing in Miami? I said, well, I moved here for a year. You have to come to my gym. That Cyborg type, right? You have to come to my gym right now. I'm going to put you in the car. We're going to go there now. I said, bro, I'm not even training. I'm working like an asshole here. I don't have any time and this and that. So no, you're going to come. So I went. Next day I was there. And I was fat, lazy. I wasn't training well. It was horrible. So I got my ass kicked every day for at least 6 months, every day. And to the day that I wasn't anymore. And then I found my best jiu-jitsu again and started to compete again. And it was awesome. It's been a great journey alongside Cyborg and his team. Fight Sports is an amazing place to be and to train. Everybody from all over the world, they come to Miami. Miami's a huge hub, right? So everybody ends up here. They want to come for tourism, for buying shit, whatever. But they come here to train. And our doors, we have Cyborg has open doors for everyone. Doesn't matter where you come from, you know. So we always get to train with everyone. And it's been great so far, man. It's been great to have found Cyborg and Fight Sports here. Changed my life since I moved to the U.S.
That's so crazy. Like, especially, like, I mean, like, I think just the fact that you just bumped into Cyborg, that's yeah. Like almost like a serendipity, right?
But then... Yeah, exactly. Meant to be. I mean, it literally changed the whole structure of my life in the U.S., just training at Fight Sports gave me a different meaning for my work. I was working with a sports supplement company back then, and I started moving the focus of the company to jiu-jitsu instead of bodybuilding and all that stuff, which ended up me getting in a disagreement with my partner, which ended up to great. So in 2019, 2 years ago, I started my own brand, Fighter's Choice, which is completely aimed towards the grappling community.
Yeah, man.
I don't want to have anything to do with bodybuilding anymore. Thank God. Oh my God, these guys suck so bad.
So look, let me just give a bit of context for people, because this is a jiu-jitsu podcast, but we do have a lot of listeners that don't necessarily follow jiu-jitsu or know jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
So Fight Sports is, I guess, like, it's more than a team, like we call it a family, but for those that aren't necessarily like familiar with jiu-jitsu, it's kind of like an affiliation, right? Like you have a lot of different teams around the world, and Fight Sports is the one that Master Cyborg, Roberto Abreu, he heads it up. And the reason that it's important is because Iki and I go to London Fight Factory, which is run by Luis Ribeiro, aka Machinia. He sends his love to you, my bro. And the reason that this kind of relationship is important is because Luis is under Fight Sports, and Cyborg has been here a few times, but man, when you start talking about Miami, the hub, you know, the pilgrimage to go there, it gets me so fired up.
Yeah.
Because what you got to realize is that, like, Iki and I, the rest of the guys, social media, we watch everything that you guys do, you know? We keep one eye on it. We do the drills that we see you guys doing. We watch the competition rolls. And, like, we have to get over there. We have to go. And just talking about it gets me fired up.
I have to as soon, as quick as possible.
Yes, sir.
Because so much great stuff is happening here right now as we speak. Our gym, like the gym, you've seen the gym. It's beautiful, right? It's big. Incredible. It's beautiful. We're going to move in maybe, hopefully, I don't know the time exactly, but maybe by the end of this year, beginning of next year, we're going to move to a place that's going to be like 3 or 4 times bigger.
Ooh,
that's insane.
I can't wait.
So I just recommend you guys that you, like, just come see this place, train here, because it's not going to be for too long.
Yeah, man, that's good to know. I mean, everyone, we've had a few people from our gym go over, and everyone that comes back just says the same thing, like, you have to get out there.
And they all come back with, like, a different experience. Like, it changes their damn different. Like, I remember Ricardo, like, he's a brown belt now. You're saying, for me, what it changed, it wasn't even training with the higher levels, was going to the beginner classes and seeing how strong the fundamentals are with the knee.
Yeah.
And then Eneko was like, man, before training in Fight Sports, I'd never lifted a weight in my life. Now I put so much effort into lifting weights.
That's what Galinho said. He said when he came back, he realized the importance of, like, weight training and strength training and getting that physical frame ready.
Yeah, it's really important. Not only for strength. It's the whole team does that routine. So you the sense of belonging increases in you, you know? So it's even better. So when people come here and they start training and start doing the beginners class, the fundamentals, our fundamentals class is really, really strong. So people walk out of their white belt 31st classes, they know what to do on the mats, like, for sure. As opposed to me as a blue belt, when I got to blue, even though, like, because I was training with so many monsters that it wasn't like a matter of survival, a survival of the fittest. That's what it's all about. People were not showing me a lot of fundamentals. They showed me to get out of a mount, stand up on guard passing, and that was that. The rest is like just training and throwing yourself to the lions and try to get out of there like alive. So that's pretty much what I did my whole life from my early beginnings. So in Fight Sports, we have a very strong fundamental and beginner session, and people really, really learn their basics so they can do well when they start rolling with everyone.
So important.
One thing that stood out for me when you're telling your story, it's from 93 to 99, you got your black belt. And then from 99 to 2006, I'm guessing a lot of life happened. And at some point, you went from, I'm training every day, I'm a monster, to, oh, all of a sudden, I've gained a little bit of weight and I'm not training as long. What happened, and how do you think you moved out of that rut and got?
Until 2001. In 99, I got my black belt in December. In March 2000, I did my first tournament as a black belt, which was the Pan Ams here in the U.S. I won my division, and I lost the absolute on the finals to Fernando Margarida. And, like, it was a terrible fight. For me, it was one of my toughest fight ever in my career, because I fought Margarida. I felt like I was drowning. It was crazy. The amount of movement that he brought, I was just in defense mode from first to last minute. He ended up scoring only 2 points. but I thought it was like 20-0 because he mounted and he unmounted to get my back, and he didn't get my back. I defended the hook, but he went to my neck. I almost stepped. He went to my arm, almost broke. Then I went to omoplata, almost dislocated my shoulder. And a lot of almosts. So when I look at the score, I said, man, probably 20-0. But it was 2-0 only because he didn't care about keeping the points. He wanted to kill me. And he almost did. So I walked up there. I loved it. It was probably the toughest match in my life. So from there, I trained even harder. And the year 2000, I was working at a big company, and I didn't have a lot of time to train, but I was training as much as I could. Came 2001, I was doing a lot of no-gi, and Minotauro invited me over to do his camp in Japan. So I went with him, with Renato Babalu, and Antoine Jaouji, and Bebel Duarte. So we went to Japan and we stayed there for around a month, training for his competition. And when I got back from there, that's what I was saying. Like, I'm going to do MMA because I'm doing really well. And Minotauro invited me because I was training really well in no-gi. So when I got back, I hurt my neck really bad. Really, really bad. And the doctor said I might never walk again. So in that moment, I promised God that if I walked out of that, I would not do MMA or train in no-gi ever again. And when I walked out of there, I was so happy that, because my son was just born in 2001. I was 25, and I had a chance of not being able to picking my son on the lap. I didn't know if I would move again. And when I did, I said, you know what, let me just focus on my life. Because back then in 2000, there was no money to be made in jiu-jitsu. Yeah, you guys need to understand that. There was no money to be made. The most money that I made in a tournament was 500 reais, which today is like $90, you know? So it's nothing. And I said, you know, I had a career ahead of me. My father was a very well-known marketing guy in Brazil. And I learned a lot from him, and I studied. I did. I have two bachelor degrees. I have an extension in exercise physiology. So I studied my ass, and I had a lot of stuff in my career to pursue. So I said, you know what? Jiu-jitsu is going to be a hobby. I'm walking out of that. I don't want to get killed. I don't want to fuck the rest of my life. And from 2001 to 2005, let's say, I was like training maybe twice a week, if at all. And then 2006, when I met Cyborg at Nova Geração, I started committing to it again. But then work was overwhelming. And I chose the path of the career because I really wanted to make a lot of money, you know? And I knew I could. So I pursued my career. I did everything I did, to the point where in 2013, I told my wife, we should spend a year in the U.S. or anywhere else. I just want to spend a year not doing anything, like take a sabbatical. And because we're doing really well. And I said, you know what? Let's just spend a year out. And we came to the U.S. in late 2013 to spend the holidays and never went back.
Nice, man.
That was pretty much it. So when I got here, we started a new company, which was Adaptogen Science, which is a supplement company that still exists. It's in Brazil. I was working like crazy from 2014 all the way to 2018, which was the lifespan of Adaptogen here in the US, to the point where in 2018, I talked with my partners and I said, okay, so if you guys don't agree with focusing on jiu-jitsu and grappling, I think that's it for me. I'd rather go my own way. And they said, man, but what you going to do? Because we're taking the brand to Brazil. If you want to come back to Brazil, I said, no, I'm not coming back to Brazil, man. I'm training in fight sports. I'm happy as fuck. I'm living well here. I don't have much money, but you know what? I made money once. I can make money again. And that's that. And mid-2019, I met my current partner at Fighter's Choice, which is a very, very focused blue belt at age 53. He loves jiu-jitsu just like we do. And we partner up with Fighter's Choice, and the rest is history.
It's interesting you say this, that when you started out in jiu-jitsu, there was no money to be made.
Zero.
Yeah. I think it's probably fair to say, so Iki and I, we've been training just over 3 years, three and a bit years. And I think it's fair to say, we're witnessing a bit of a renaissance in jiu-jitsu. There's not a lot of money to be made, but we're seeing fight to win, who's number one, exposure.
Let me tell you this. There's a lot of money to be made in jiu-jitsu.
There you go. Mm. There you go.
There is. Honestly, there is. You can make a very decent living by only competing in jiu-jitsu.
That's right interesting. Now. Yeah.
I mean, at least in the U.S., because you have a lot of franchises, a lot of events. Yeah, the pandemic sucked, but it's all going to come back. It's coming back already. And especially here in Florida. Florida and Texas led the way here in the U.S.
Yeah.
So we're completely out of the pandemic pretty much. No masks anymore, nothing. We're just training hard, going to the beach, doing our thing. Everything is going back to normalcy. And there is a lot of money to be made in every side and every aspect of the sport, either by competing, by teaching, by anything you want to do, seminars, sponsorship is more aggressive than ever. Everything, man, everything. There are some events that are coming up, fighting celebrities and stuff like that, like Jake Paul and Logan the Paul brothers doing. It's so much stuff happening right now that if you focus on, you know what, I need to make $100,000 this year just in jiu-jitsu, you will make $100,000. I mean, if you get into freaking Spider Korea, it's $100,000 if you win. Kainan won $100,000.
Yeah.
Kainan Duarte and Levi Jones Leary. They both earned $100,000 in one day competition.
There you go.
So there is money. Money's being thrown in jiu-jitsu like never before. That's the message. People and companies are throwing money, investing money in jiu-jitsu like they never did before.
Victor. Please fight Jake Paul for me. please fight Jake Paul for me.
With one hand on the belt. As long as takedowns are permitted. Yeah.
Bro, he can go MMA. He's allowed full MMA. You just go jiu-jitsu.
He can do whatever. Honestly, as long as I can take, if I'm allowed to take him down, I only need one hand.
Oh, that's the fight I want.
That's crazy. It's like jiu-jitsu. It's like it's the boxing. You can have a lucky punch. You can't have a lucky triangle,
that,
right?
No one slips into an armbar.
Yeah.
But that's super interesting. I mean, how do you think it's going to go? Because let me give a bit more context for people as well.
Sure.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I see yours and Cyborg's relationship, you're like his right-hand man. If he's fighting, if he's going somewhere, you're there, you're by him, always in his corner, always there. So from where I'm sitting, you have the perfect view to see potentially where this sport is going. Do you think it's going to break into mainstream media? Do you think it's going to, be open to the masses? How do you see this developing?
Okay, let me answer that with one question. What is mainstream media for you right now?
Mainstream media for me is someone who doesn't do jiu-jitsu that would actively watch it in their spare time.
Right. So, yes, if we understand that even though jiu-jitsu, technical jiu-jitsu is boring for the masses because they do not understand, they do not get, and I don't blame them, our sport is really tricky, so is wrestling.
Yeah.
And so is a lot of other sports that grew, freaking pool or even poker. And it's out there. You know why it's out there? Because the practitioners became celebrities.
Mm.
And mainstream and people out there, they want to follow celebrities no matter what they do. If you become a celebrity, people are going to follow you. And they're going to go into that trend. And they're going to, I'm going to start doing jiu-jitsu. And you know what? Our sport is being practiced in the whole world, in the whole globe. And there are people like Keanu Reeves and Demi Lovato and all these guys that are practicing jiu-jitsu and talking about it. Joe Rogan is the best spokesman for jiu-jitsu you can find. You know, there is so much stuff happening to bring attention to jiu-jitsu, that yes, I think that people that are not into jiu-jitsu will end up watching it because it's going to fall in their faces. You know, it's they're not going to be able to go around it. Just so you know, it's really, I don't see like people going to the pyramid to see the worlds. I don't see that happening. I do not see that happening. But I also don't care if it's going to be streamed on ESPN, because I think that the power of live streaming became so much bigger, and on-demand sports became so much bigger than freaking Fox Sports or ESPN, that in no time, mainstream media is going to be what we're doing right now. And your channel will be watched by millions of people, because people are going to get into it. And another thing, authenticity. Like, our sport is authentic. It's not catch wrestling. It's not WWE. It's real. People are not fucking around. Sorry, my English.
Nah, that's true.
So yeah. People like it.
Yeah.
People like reality. That's why reality shows are so trendy. You know? So the smarter guys, like Keenan Cornelius, for instance, he put together a house, and he's housing six fighters there. And he's going to start filming their daily things, like a Big Brother thing, you know? And this is super smart, because this is reality. And people want to see reality. So that kind of mainstream is coming to jiu-jitsu. People that don't watch it are going to start watching it, because the names are coming out there. Guys like Gordon Ryan, for instance, doesn't matter how like divisive he is, he brings a lot of attention from outside, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he's always said that's his goal, right? To try and bring jiu-jitsu to the
exactly.
masses. So hate
exactly.
him or love him, that is what he's working towards.
And he understands his following, and he understands what they want to see, what they want to hear. And he just does that, you know? So he supplies the demand. The more we have people in our sports supplying the demand, the better for viewership. I'm not saying the better for the sport. I'm saying the better for viewership, for money, you know. But then we can argue, Victor, is this going to be good for the martial art philosophy? Then we can discuss that. But in terms of viewership, trending, mainstream, yes, it's going to grow. It's only going to grow. It's only going to grow. IBJJF is 25 years in. They took 25 years to get to where we're at, and we're going to go much further. And all the events that are out there, the Third Coast Grapplings, the Who's Number Ones for Flow Grappling, the Fight to Wins, the Kasais, all these events, they're popular. The Polaris, you know, they're all popping up, and it's only going to grow. You know, we're going to have more and more, with more fighters, because there are more fighters coming up, and then more money being thrown at it, because companies want to invest in their core, and their core is watching those events. Their core is practicing that sport. So instead of just putting an advertisement on mainstream TV, they're going to put an advertisement on your channel on those events, because we are watching it. You know, my Instagram, for instance, is very small, but I have so much engagement that if I offer it to a company, a lot of companies already asked me to announce. I just don't want to be boring. You know, in my YouTube channel, I just don't want to be bored. People get bored watching my videos with ads, so I don't monetize it. But so many people already offered me that, because they say, "Oh, my target audience is watching you. So I need to put my product there." You know, so that's only going to grow. If it's happening to me with such a small audience, I can only imagine what's happening to guys with like 300, 400, 500 million followers, you know?
There's one guy who is very dedicated to your YouTube channel. He watches them religiously. And that
does he?
That's your good friend, Luis Machinho Ribeiro.
So
we told him that we were going to be speaking to you. He sends his love. But we said, is there anything you want to ask him? And he said, talk to Victor about American Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, shit.
He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not opposed to the idea of people talking about it. I think that the more exposure, the more attention. I learned one thing in school. I had a professor that says, you want to know where money is? Look where the attention is. If there is attention, there is money to be made. Whatever people are paying attention to, there is money to be made in that situation there. So, yes, American Jiu-Jitsu. I don't use the term Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I never did. Because Americans came up with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu back then. Because when you said Jiu-Jitsu, people say, oh, the Japanese, no. The thing that Brazilians are doing here, like in the UFC back in 94, 95, with Royce Gracie and all that stuff. Oh, the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which became Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So when the black belts came to the U.S. in masses in the 90s, they opened their own gyms and called it Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. They couldn't call it Gracie Jiu-Jitsu because it was a registered brand by Rory and Gracie. So you couldn't use it. If they could, they would have. And there would never be Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It would be Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. Because that's what was famous. Because Jiu-Jitsu exploded in the U.S. in 1993 to 1994 when Royce Gracie started smashing all these guys. And people, what does this guy do in the gi? What the hell is that? That's Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So when people moved here and started opening their gyms, they wanted to put Gracie Jiu-Jitsu in their front door, but they couldn't. They weren't allowed to. So they had to do something else. They call it Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Today, I see that a lot of Americans, even though they learned from Brazilians, they developed their own way of fighting. Yes. Does that mean that they can claim a new name for the sport? No, it does not. Because every time someone comes with a different game, calls it whatever they want, Dora Jiu-Jitsu, that doesn't make any sense. You know, does not make any sense. Jiu-Jitsu is Jiu-Jitsu, and that's what is it. That's the nation. We belong to the nation of Jiu-Jitsu. If it came from Brazil, if it came from Japan, upgraded in the U.S. or in Europe, it doesn't change the fact that it's Jiu-Jitsu, and nobody owns that art. If anyone could claim ownership of Jiu-Jitsu, it would be the Gracies. They would be able to. They would have a say on that. But I don't see that Jiu-Jitsu is a Brazilian sport, just as Muay Thai is of Thailand. But Muay Thai is everywhere in the world, you know? And it grew much more in the U.S. than it did in Thailand. Because the country is much bigger with much more money and power and much more powerful. The same with Jiu-Jitsu. It was born pretty much in the north of Brazil, spread it out in the whole country. They came to the U.S. in 1978 with Rory and Gracie, and then it exploded in the 90s. Because of media, because of pay-per-views, because of viewership, because of attention, pretty much. So there's much more attention in Jiu-Jitsu within the United States than within Brazil. But that doesn't change the fact that it was born in Brazil. And that doesn't change the fact that it's Jiu-Jitsu, not Brazilian or American. That's my way of seeing it.
I'm glad we got that down.
You know, like, it's interesting. You mentioned how Jiu-Jitsu is changing now in America, and in every competition there is like something new coming up. There's like a new move, a new person. Where do you see Jiu-Jitsu going, especially like more of the technique part of Jiu-Jitsu?
Right. So people ask me about the evolution of Jiu-Jitsu a lot, and I don't see an evolution in Jiu-Jitsu. I see an expansion in Jiu-Jitsu. An evolution happens in my understanding. An evolution happens when things that used to work don't work anymore, and there's new stuff that work and took place of the things that doesn't work anymore. That doesn't happen in Jiu-Jitsu. Because everything that worked back in my day when I was a blue belt still works today. Mm. Because I use the same techniques I used to do as a blue belt, and I still beat black belts today with the same technique. On the other hand, there are a lot of kids coming up with different techniques that really, really effectively, like, used to submit the other guy to win tournaments, to teach seminars and all that stuff, and they really work. But that doesn't mean that the things from the past don't work. So that's not an evolution. It's an expansion. Jiu-Jitsu is getting bigger and broader, which is great. The more, because how many guard passes I knew until black belt? Maybe 4, 3. And now I know like 9 that I can do, that I'm able to actually practice. There are some that I can't because I can't jump around or stuff like that. But that it broadened up. So I see jiu-jitsu expanding rather than evolving, you know? And it only comes for the best. And yes, I see the lapel tricks, and I see all the inverted burning bolo stuff and all that. It's all great. I love it. It's like everything. If it's bringing more attention, if it's bringing more action to the sport of jiu-jitsu, I love it. I just love it. I remember when people were complaining, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, oh, 50-50, those guys that they just sit and they just interlace their legs, 50-50 should be banned from jiu-jitsu. No, asshole, you have to learn how to deal with it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what? And you know what? Now, 50-50 is not a problem anymore. People learn how to deal with it. That's it. So you learn how to deal with it. You end up creating more techniques that broadens up the sport and brings more technique to the sport, which allows more people to teach, which allow more people to gather attention to them and sell seminars, sell DVDs, sell instructionals. And there's more money being made. I'm always looking at the whole pie. I never looked to a slice of the pie. I'm looking at the whole pie, and I want that pie to be bigger, and not everyone fighting for just one slice of the pie. You know, so if techniques are coming up, I love them, and I want them to like to multiply. And if there's people consuming it, even better.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, but between me and you, Victor, you hate 50-50, right? Yeah, like we all hate 50-50.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I had some lessons with Wagner Rocha.
Yeah.
On the ankle and heel game. Yeah. That I don't care about 50 anymore.
Man, this is why we got. This is why we got good
money. I just go for the heels and for the feet, and there's so much leg locks, so many leg locks from their intricacies, that I don't mind. I don't mind being in there anymore.
What's Wagner like to train with?
Oh my God, the same way you see him competing.
Yeah.
Same brutality that he, people say, but is it Wagner like this in training? Man, he has to practice how he competes, right? And he does it on us. the collar ties, the jabs on the chest, the whole brutality game, the Python, everything, everything goes. Everything goes to the room.
I interviewed Ross Nichols from the UK on who his toughest fight ever, and straight off the bat, he was like, yeah, Wagner. It was just...
Wagner's everyone's toughest match, I'm telling you. Is everyone's toughest role in the gym. I'd rather turn your cyber 10 times and not deal with Wagner once. Wow. That's pretty much what it is.
I feel like for anyone listening right now, they should go either to Victor's Instagram, Wagner's Instagram, Cyborg's Instagram. Just go like Fight Sports Miami HQ. Scroll through until you find like a clip where they're all in the black rash guards. You'll know because they're all like jacked and huge. And then just give it a quick watch just to like kind of see the intensity that we're talking about
it's
the brutality of it all.
One question we always ask, it's if you had a white belt first day and he wants to compete in 6 months,
right?
Never done jiu-jitsu before, what do you teach him?
Exactly what I was taught, because in December 1993 I did my first competition, so in 6 months I started competing.
Wow.
So he's got the answer. I would teach him to I like the theory of from the ground up. So I would teach him to deal with his back on the mat, like close guard, some scissor sweep, some sort of simple sweeps with the legs from close guard. attacks from close guard, the chokes, the triangles, the arm bars, practice that, get to the tournament, pull guard, pull close guard, and deal from that, and deal from there. Because these are more easier games that you can evolve really quick if you train it in 6 months from not knowing what jiu-jitsu is to be a decent arm bar, or to have a decent arm bar, triangle, or sweep is not that hard. Anyone can do it, you know? Our sport is really, really easy. It's just really complex, but it's easy. It's easy to learn. If it wasn't easy, we wouldn't have so many great guys out there, you know? The matter is, like, practice. People try to say, oh, jiu-jitsu is super difficult. No, it's easy. It's super easy. It's so easy that we have now a 17-year-old kid here at the gym training with us, brown belt, killing everyone. It's how easy that is.
Is it?
Yeah. It's insane. It's, like, I watched his last fight. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, man. Just the basics guys, to it. To
you guys
it.
Need to see him fighting the gi now.
In the gi?
He's going to fight on the 12th.
Yeah.
In Vegas against 7 black belts. He's going to be the only brown belt in the bracket for 10 grand. You got to see that.
Have you got your money on him?
Huh?
You got your money on him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Man, I wish we could bet on jiu-jitsu.
Like, we will. Yeah. We will.
That's when we start printing.
Right. Actually, we can right now. We can. On Fight to Win, you're able to bet. It's not very legit, in my opinion, the way I see it. But it's going to grow. It's definitely going to grow. Because the attention is, once again, like these houses, they see that the attention in jiu-jitsu and grapple and say, man, you know what? Horse racing sucks. Let's put our money here. You know, that's going to happen. It is happening. You know, it's on us.
Nice, man.
Speaking of attention, one thing that brings a lot of attention to your YouTube channel, it's your segment, Deja Zero, 10-0. So we actually picked all the questions from Deja Zero. We wanted to ask you.
Oh, my God. Doing Deja Zero to me?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody's ever done it. But,
that's going to be tough. I need to think. I never give people the time to think, and now I want time to think.
Yeah, and you're always like, no, just answer. Just keep going. It's like, I don't know if I translated them well, right? But so the first one, best fight of your life.
Best fight of my life, 1997, Brazilian Team Brazilian Nationals. I was a brown belt. I fought against Roberto Roleta in the black belt, and I beat him. And it was like I was five months as a brown belt. That's pretty much, I compare this fight as like, say a recent brown belt jumps on Worlds and beats Buchecha.
Wow.
Roleta was the Buchecha of our days.
Wow. Sick, man.
Insane.
Bouchesh has come to Fight Sports before. I need to train.
Many times.
Yeah.
He's very good friends with Cyborg and all the team. We love him. Great, amazing guy.
Yeah.
Amazing guy. We love him.
Worst fight of your life. You mentioned it, but yeah, worst fight
of your life. Yeah, right, against Margarita. That was awful. I tried my best, though, but that was awful.
Toughest person you've trained with?
Ricardo Libório, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Have you rode with him like in recent years?
Not in recent years. In 2014, I rode with him again. Same thing.
Yeah?
Can't do shit. Man. You can't pull. I never score. I trained with Libório back in my day there in Carson Gracie many times, and then at Brazilian top team as well. I know for sure that I never scored 1 point in him. No matter how strong I was, how good I was, wow. I never scored 1 point in him.
So sick.
I don't know if I ended up any row with him without tapping. I think I never did. I think I always tapped. Wow. At least one.
That's just insane.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's how bad it is. It's how bad it is. But you know what? The guys from his time, if you ask them these questions, they're going to say, we bought it.
Yeah.
He was the hardest, toughest role in the room whatever room he was.
Oh, so sick. He came to London Fight Factory. I think he got like an invite through Teta, through Coach, and then he came.
Right.
Man,
right.
He just like chilled out on the mats like 2 hours afterwards, just answering questions, showing moves, like talking. Man, I just love that guy so much.
He's magical.
Yeah, man. What we got next?
Coolest academy you've been to?
Man, I love the Studio 54 in San Diego. Nice. I was really impressed by that gym. But the atmosphere that I find at Fight Sports headquarters, it's second to none.
Yeah.
So that place is like the best.
But this is all irrelevant because, of course, when you come to London Fight Factory, then like that would be your number one answer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
For sure.
City you most loved to visit?
Tokyo.
Is it? How yeah. come? Like, what about it? Didn't expect that.
It's like when you think you know the world and you go to Tokyo, you find out that there's a different world. It's like a parallel universe. Tokyo has nothing to do with everything that you know. If you go there, you're going to understand what I'm saying by the time you try to go across the street in the Shibuya quarter and you see that when the light goes green, you better run or you're going to get crossed over by people. When you rent a bike and you drop your bike and there's like 200 bikes, exactly the same as yours, you drop it there. There's no chance you're going to get your bike again, but there's always going to be a bike for you there.
Wow.
That's how educated people are, like how much of citizenship they have. Like in the sense of community, there's a lot of people in a very small piece of land that they can get really well organized in order for the thing to function, and it functions better than clockwork. It's ridiculous. So Tokyo is the place that most amazed me by their culture, and I love sushi as well. So,
favorite food?
Steak.
I knew it. I so knew it.
What kind of steak?
Since I'm here in the US, ribeyes are my preferred, my go-to. But overall, picanha.
Yeah, I knew it. I see like on Instagram, everyone always tags you on picanha.
I love it, man. I love it. My thing is steak. Steak and wine. That's the perfect duo.
Can't go wrong.
Best way of celebrating a win or a title?
Man, this is I love getting out of the tournament with my guys, with my team, my crew, going to a bar and just having a beer, you know, and we're all there and talking about the highlights of the tournament and like cheering for each other. And, I saw that move you did. Man, you see that I applied that technique that you taught last week on the finals. That's the best. Nice. And then go home and just crash. That's it. But I'd love to have a beer at the bar, right at like smelling, like with the gi pants still. With the gi pants still smelling like smelling bad, but have a beer, you know, enjoy life. It's so good. Nice, I love it. Man.
Kimono, blue, white, or black?
Black.
Wow, I didn't expect that. I thought it was going to say white.
I would say white because I'm so traditional, but no, I like black.
Do you have a thing about which kimono you compete with, which one you train with, and which one you teach with?
No, I don't. Neither kimono nor belt. I do whatever with whatever. Of course, I'm gonna pick my best looking one to teach. I have a couple sets of white and black kimonos with the right patches and looking good so they can compete with them with my name on it. So I use them to compete. And I have some there just have the Fight Sports logo that I train with. But if they're not available, I'll get whatever is in front of me. I don't care.
Wow. Favorite style of music?
Man, rock and roll aiming towards heavy metal.
Wow, around which year? Because like that's broad.
There you go. Good question. Yeah. Good question. In the 80s, I started loving. I started listening to heavy metal. My first band that I fell in love with was Iron Maiden, and then AC/DC, and then Black Sabbath. The Dio days, though, the Ronnie James Dio days. And I ended up loving heavy metal, like all around Slayer, Megadeth. I love that shit, you know. But then Rock and Roll rocked me with a Lynyrd Skynyrd, which I love, and Grateful Dead, like more classic rock, ZZ Top and all that stuff. Deep Purple a lot. But today I listen to a lot of stuff, you know. I like the house and like house, and I don't like too much techno, but I like house and chill. So there's a Brazilian guy called Vintage Culture. You guys need to listen to this guy.
Vintage Culture.
Vintage Culture.
Vintage Culture. He calls himself Vintage Culture, so it's really cool. But he's really good, and I listen to it a lot. Like, I have a great time listening to it.
Have you heard of a band called Raven's Age?
Yeah, yeah.
Bro, so I know the bass player.
You know the bass player.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, okay. my girlfriend is best mates with him. He's called George, and his dad is in Iron Maiden. And this is mental. He is the sickest musician I've ever met. He's insane.
Hold on, his dad plays at Iron Maiden?
His dad is in Iron Maiden. I don't know.
Who is that?
Hang on a second. Let me get this right. So basically,
what's the guy's name? What's the guy's name? George what?
George, I think George Harris. Hang on a sec.
Steve Harris.
Yeah.
It's Steve Harris. The bass player. Is the leader of Iron Maiden.
There you go.
He started Iron Maiden.
There you go.
He started Iron Maiden in 1980.
Yeah, here we go. So George, yeah. I met him the other day, and he's like just the coolest, most chill, down-to-earth guy. But he is just such a sick musician, and he's got this band called Raven's Edge.
Steve Harris?
No, I haven't met Steve Harris. But
meet Steve Harris, take a picture and send it to me, please.
Okay, because George is getting married at his dad's like place, and yeah. I don't know if I'm invited yet, because obviously my girlfriend's invited, but we've only just got together, so I don't know if I've got an invite.
Man, if you meet, probably if you're going to Steve Harris's place. Probably Bruce Dickinson's going to be there and all these guys.
Probably, man.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Take as many pictures as you can and send it to
But yeah, he was... So I checked out his band. It's like perfect gym music. Like headphones on, off you go. It's so sick.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. That's my biggest frustration. I can't play shit.
Can you not? Have you tried?
I can't play a bell.
Nice one.
I suck so bad.
The last one, actually, like I really like that answer, because it's like it's only timeless rock and roll.
And
now the last one, dream you still want to accomplish.
There are quite a few, but aiming towards jiu-jitsu, I want to compete at Worlds Adult. Still, probably going to happen this year, because if they have Worlds Adult this year, probably there's not going to be any points required. So I'm jumping in.
Sick. How does that work with the rest?
Gonna get humbled, but I won't be there.
How does that work with the rest of the fight sports guys? Do you guys like close out, or like if you're in the same categories and stuff?
It depends. Like if it's me and Cyber, we're not gonna close out. We're gonna go for it.
Nice. I love that so much.
Cool.
We already go for it every day, man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just gotta.
We're not
be
gonna pretend that. Oh no, I can't do this. We have to close out because like we're so good friends. But what about our training, man? We're trying to rip each other's head off every single day.
I love that.
So it's just be hypocritics. I
love that, man.
Cool. Yeah.
Man, Victor.
This is amazing.
Thank you so much, man.
Worth the wait.
I really appreciate you guys. I'm really sorry that I couldn't do it earlier. I've been traveling like crazy. This is the first weekend I'm staying here. I was in Texas last week. Going to Austin again, to Texas, this upcoming weekend with Mikael and Wagner Rocha. They're fighting this weekend on Friday. Please don't miss that.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Guys, do not miss that. Mikael is going to fight for free. It's going to be streamed free on Flow Grappling. Yeah. You know, so the preliminary fights are going to be free on Flow. So even if you don't have a subscription, you can watch Mikael Galvão fighting Andrew Tackett. Don't miss that. You're going to see something you've never saw before. I'm telling you guys, it's gonna worth it.
That's a special fight too, Andrew and Mikhail Gervon.
Yeah,
it's like,
Andrew is so skilled. Yeah, the kid is so amazing. But Mikhail is just a different kind of animal.
His brother's making big waves as well, William.
William's killing it. Had a rough time against Tyro Tolo, but it's just he got that fight right after he fought Wagner.
Yeah. You need a bit more of a break.
Yeah, he could use some break.
Do you go to Brazilian Fight Factory? Do you go to Brooktoo's place when you go over to Texas?
I went there.
Yeah.
I went to Brooktoo. I started managing these athletes, like William, Andrew, and Cody Steele.
Sick.
They're managed by my company now, by Fighters Choice Management.
Wow.
So
no, I love that.
I opened Fighters Choice Management, so I'm managing a bunch of athletes and helping them with their purses, with negotiating their shows, their appearances, their seminars, sponsorships, all that stuff. So they can take all of that out of their plate so they can focus on training. That's it.
Man, I love that.
Everything else is on me.
Because you must know that Brooker 2 was London Fight Factory over in London.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he told the whole story.
Man,
he's from Rio. He's from Rio. We're brothers from Rio.
I love it.
So he was here in Miami. We had a great cup of coffee. Next week, I'm going to be with him in Austin. So we're gonna go out to dinner and stuff like that. Sick. Yeah, Brooker 2 is a great guy, man. Rodrigo is a great guy. I like him a lot.
Cool.
Love it.
Thanks so much. By the way, is there like anything you'd like to promote or let our audience know that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. If you guys like, there's one thing that we're starting shipping Fighters Choice products worldwide next week.
Whoa.
So if you guys go check out fighterschoice.com, our products I have. Okay, this is my go-to here.
So this is the one that Coach has all the time.
Yeah.
And I always say to Coach, how do you have this? Yeah.
Like the first product you have to get from Fighters Choice is Recover. Because you're gonna make probably like 2 liters of water and ice. You put 2 scoops in it in a big jug, leave it mat side, and in between rows you sip through it. It's just like it's gonna give you a different training experience because it recovers really quick. So you feel great for the next round, even though the next round is a minute later. You're going to be ready. So Recover is amazing. So we're going to start shipping worldwide starting June 1st, which is almost next week. June 1st. And we're going to throw a code. There you go. We can do a discount code for your guys. Let's get this code going. I'm going to let you guys know. And we go from there. You just put it there. And there's going to be like 20% discount.
That's sick. Amazing.
That's so good, man.
Awesome. Right off the bat.
Cool.
I love it.
Amazing, Vitor. Have a great weekend. And we'll catch soon. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Ooh. I really appreciate you guys. Say hello to Manchinha.
Yeah.
Waiting for him here so he can beat my ass again. like a lot of love from Miami to all you guys there.
Cool. Love from my soup.
Thank you, bro. All the best.
You got it, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much for the time.
Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Cheers.